Today, fighters, I have a conversation with my good buddy, Steve Burnett. He is a painting contractor outside of Detroit. Company's called Paintly. You can check out the link in the show notes and stuff. We talk about everything from profit, the experience, to finding sex toys under beds. And so with that, I'm just going to shut my damn mouth and get to it. Here is my interview with Steve. Steve Burnett, welcome to the fight. What's going on?
Hey, not much, man. How are you?
I'm doing good. So first of all, I got to tell you, I love the name of your painting company.
Thank you.
Paintly.
Paintly.
It sounds like it should be like this big, massively huge franchised brand. That's what it sounds like to me. So
that's good.
Why'd you come up with a name, man? Why Paintly?
So that's a good question. It's a pretty underwhelming story. So my business partner and I, once we were deciding to go into business together, we literally like had a word generation thing just to kind of mess around, and Paintly popped up on one of those things. And it was kind of one of those things, just like you said, like I saw that, we saw that, and we were like, you know what? That's it. Simple. Paintly. It could go so far, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's like Calendly, you know, Paintly. Like, that's what I'm saying. It just reminds me of like a bigger brand, which is really cool, man. So, you're in Michigan. Where are you at? Mm-hmm. Michigan, where at? What part?
Like Metro Detroit area, Southeast Michigan. Okay.
Yep. Cool. And are you from there?
Yep. Grew up here.
All right. So how long have you been in business?
Well, I've been painting for almost 10 years, and I've always been contracting my own work. Mm-hmm. You know how it goes. People, you know, oh, you paint? Hey, come look at this. Come look at this. I feel like I've truly, legitimately been in business, though, for 5 years.
In the last 5 years, we'll just take it 5 years. What comes to mind? One thing that if you only had one thing to impart, one bit of knowledge to impart mm-hmm. on another contractor, what would that be?
It's okay to not know everything.
Ooh, that was quick, man. You didn't even have to think about it.
Yeah. No, I don't know if it's just like, because contractors, it's really common for us to be like, yeah, we're hard workers and we know our shit. You know, it's predominantly men, you know, and I think that culturally, you know, we're kind of taught or we're fostered not to show weakness or fear or things like that. But I think that humility, you know, like it's okay to not know everything. Like I thought that, you know, if I showed any sort of weakness, if I told any customer, you know, that's a little outside of our wheelhouse, I don't really know how to do that. Mm-hmm. Or to tell an employee like, hey, I'm really sorry, I messed up. Like that, there's like this fear, this limiting belief that like that's showing some sort of weakness, but it's not. I mean, that's growth. That's maturity. And I'm like learning that. Like I'm learning so much ever since mm-hmm. when I joined the CSA two years ago, and I started like opening myself up to like being coached and how much knowledge there is out there, how much I didn't know. I'm like, man, like I don't know anything. Like I need to constantly be learning if I'm gonna grow. And that's what I want to do. I want to grow. I want Paintly to be that big brand and for it to support itself and provide a great service to people and to provide a great opportunity for career and income for its workers, you know? And mm-hmm. so, yeah.
It reminds me of the saying, I don't know where I first heard it, but I've adopted it, is I'd rather be rich than right. But no, I mean, I, you know, you could replace that for what I'd rather be happy and successful. I'd rather be fulfilled. I'd rather be wealthy. You know, I don't care what all the above than me having to be right. And it's funny, I bring this up. This is fresh on my brain because I'm not going to name the person, but I asked a question in online somewhere. I won't even tell you guys where, because I'm really trying to protect this person. Because it's just not appropriate to like throw them under the bus. Because my intent is not to throw them under the bus. Hopefully that is clear. But, you know, we always talk about like bidding your work at a 50% gross profit and all this other stuff. And I always get these messages, and it's a long one, so I'm trying to paraphrase it right now. This is obviously a last second thing that I decided to share. But like, mm-hmm. I see people defending their point of misery, their place of misery, instead of just acknowledging the fact that, hey, maybe there is a different way to do things. Maybe this whole 50% thing makes sense. Maybe this whole crazy sales process that you guys teach makes sense. And instead, I see so much energy. See, there's nothing I could read from the thing that wouldn't give it away. So that's why I'm just doing what I'm doing now. But like,
yeah.
I just see so many people defending like their position.
Right.
And you're talking about like, you know, and I don't have to know everything. I'm okay. Like, where did that come from? Have you always been kind of chill in that way?
No, I think that whenever I reach that threshold of something brand new that I'm not familiar with, I get scared and I become that. Mm-hmm. Exactly what you're talking about. I become defensive. I've given so many excuses. Like when Ryan and I first became business owners, he was like, hey, we need to put together a Paintly playbook. And I was like, no, dude, like, this is the trades. Like, we don't really need to do all that, like, legitimate company stuff. Like, we're just painting people's houses. Like, I was so wrong, but I felt mm-hmm. so right in it because it was new to me and it was scary and I didn't know it yet. And I knew that if I embarked on that journey at that point in time, I would be doing something that I wasn't good at because I never did it before. And it would have been hard. And it still is hard. I'm still writing the owner's manual and the roles and responsibilities. And it's the very not sexy, not super fun part of business that needs to happen. But I think that a big turnaround for me was when I started doing job costing, like actually doing job costing and like tracking exactly how much I paid the employees, how much like the paint, the materials were. And like actually seeing on paper, because it's kind of one of those things where if you can't unsee it once you see it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, now that I see how I'm actually performing, like, this is so necessary, you know? I'm actually seeing how we're doing. And I started like going through my bank accounts and like writing down in Excel sheets, like how much I'm paying for like the software that I'm using in our shop and our insurance. And like, I was blown away when I saw that it costs like anywhere from, depending on how the weeks fall, 10 to 12,000 a month to run Paintly. Mm-hmm. I was mind blown.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, how am I paying for this?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's people are always like, I need to know my numbers. How do you know my numbers? I'm not good at math. And this, I'm like, literally, if you want to know your numbers, take the spreadsheet we give you and plug in your last job.
Yeah.
And then look at the score. That's it. Like if you just do that, if you just job costed every single project you did, you would know your numbers in a hurry.
Yeah.
And a lot of people overcomplicate that shit. And then obviously there's different levels to this, but I'm talking just coming out of the gate, having confidence in what you're charging and this and that. You know, one of the things I always used to do is I would pre-job cost a project. So I'd run it through my software, give me a number in the hours. I'd take it, go to my job costing spreadsheet. I'd plug it in, like who's going to be on the job and what we're going to, and I go, if everything went as planned, how would this job shake out?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it just went totally as planned. And I learned to be very unemotional about those numbers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because a lot of mistakes we make when pricing our work and stuff, man, is we get emotional about it. We bring our own baggage into it, our own head trash, our life experience, our worldview. Like, I don't answer the question because we're both going to answer it in our head right now. But like, if I go, what's a lot of money? You think of a number and I think of a number and chances are the numbers are different, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's the same way with your customers. And so when you like, you price something that's legitimately $10,000, $20,000 to paint, and you're going, oh my God, I would never pay 20 grand for this. I'd never blah, blah, blah. And you're running it through your filter.
Ooh.
And, you know, and you don't know what the other person's filter is.
Right.
You know, it's, I mean, if, yeah, I mean, I'm just sitting here like that. That was always helpful to me is that we have to separate our opinion of the money because shit costs what it costs.
Yes.
That's it. And it's the biggest mistake we make financially is we're emotional about it. I don't know. That's my take.
No, that's 100%. And I think that that's what job costing kind of helps with because, and role playing too. Like mm-hmm. when I was role playing with people, it helped me separate the emotions from like, hey, this is the number. It's a number. That's what it is. It's a number, you know? And doing job costing and really understanding what I need to make to make profit and run the company, pay for everything. Mm-hmm. It's like, hey, that's what the number is. Like, that's just what it is. It's objective. It's not a feeling. It's not an emotion. It's not an opinion. It's like for us to knock this out of the park and give you what you need. This is the number that makes that make sense for us to do that for you. Yeah. And I know that because I know how much it costs me to run my company. And I know how much projects like yours look like on paper when they're done. Mm-hmm. You know,
it's funny you keep bringing up the job costing thing because I get asked all the time as a coach, we get asked like, how can I gain the confidence to bid and sell my work at a 50% or better gross profit? And my answer is job cost. Because the minute you start, like, seriously, guys that are listening to this, I can't tell you, those of you that have these limiting beliefs around what you can charge and what you should charge and what's fair and all this other bullshit. Guys, it's not fair to deliver great value and go out of business or not be able to pay your bills. It's not fair for you to not have the money to stand behind a warranty or to hide from a warranty because you know it's going to cost you money to go do it. So you blow off return on the customer's phone call for 4 months and now they're pissed off at you. Like, I could make the case 1,000 different ways of what fair is. Fair is I am uncovering your motives for wanting to do the project. And then I'm simply going, this is what it's going to cost, the investment that you're going to pay for my company to deliver that result. Mm-hmm. And now my job, and this is key, everybody, my job as a salesperson is to identify your problem. And if I could fix it, tell you what it's going to take to fix it.
Yep.
That's my job. Your job is to decide to hire me or not as a client. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yeah.
And we overcomplicate this shit because our emotions get involved. But guys, if you want confidence in what to charge and raising your prices and stuff, start job costing. Because dude, mm-hmm. when I started doing that, I remember one time and I job costed, like, this is funny. I laugh at this because it's pathetic, but we were in this position many, many years ago where we were like, as a painter, we were shooting, you know, we're getting, you know, 50, 52% gross profit on most of our jobs and things like that. So I'd learned the gross profit game. And then I took it to the next level where I'm like, all right, that's step one, but now let's focus on our net profit, right? Like, what are we really keeping after salaries and stuff? And around that time, we were rounded up to a 10%. You know, we're give or take a 10%. Mm-hmm. So dude, what I started doing is, and I always do this when I have a painter on here. I just start talking more because it's our industry, man. I just, it's where I cut my teeth. But mm-hmm. I'd have my little tablet and I'd go through, put dimensions in and blah, blah, blah. And I'd hit the thing. And I remember the first time I did this, I'm standing in this two-story foyer. Her biggest concern was don't fuck up the new staircase that we just had done. They just had it refinished and all this other stuff, right? You know this, ladders mm-hmm. and a big, huge two-story foyer. And they just wanted, they wanted the ceiling painted. They wanted the walls painted. The ceiling connected through the upper hall into the great room, but they didn't want the great room walls painted. They just wanted the ceiling painted. So you got to cut in clean again. You know what I'm talking about, mm-hmm, man. Mm-hmm. All right. It's a pain in the ass. Mm-hmm. I came up with this number. My software came up with this number for the whole thing. Let me call it $2,400. It was like $2,400. It was like a day long project. It's pretty big foyer, but you know, we'd put a team in there and be done. Mm-hmm. Most of the day would be covering shit and protecting and moving and, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And this is when I started just thinking more about net profit and that 10%. I'm like, so for basically what this is saying is I'm going to make $240 on this job. Mm-hmm. If I sell it at 240 or 2400 and everything goes right, mm-hmm. the profit's going to be the net profit, mm-hmm. the financial pat on the back is going to be $240. And that 240, you guys, that net profit is to reinvest back in the business, pay down debt, you know, build your brand, hire better people, train them better, whatever it is, right? That's net profit. Mm-hmm. It's not your salary, you guys. Okay. And dude, I remember this is the first time I went 2,400. I looked, I went $240. I go, no fucking way. I changed the price to $5,000 and they went with it.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, I'm just like, I'm not doing this. I'm not doing this for $240.
Right. So, yep. Yes.
Fighters, the profit you earn starts with the stories that you tell. Most contractors will never build their empire because they're telling the wrong stories. That's why I want to invite you to the Mile High Profit Summit, September 14th through 16th, 2022 in Westminster, Colorado. Listen, the world's at it again. Gas is going up. Inflation's on the rise. Ukraine's under attack. Uncle Sam's got his hand out. Your material costs have never been higher. Employees are nowhere to be seen. It seems like your business can't catch a break. But you know what? You got to ask yourself, is that necessarily true? You got to ask yourself, who's writing your story? And that's some of the stuff that we're going to dig into this fall at Mile High Profit Summit. So head to thecontractorfight.com/mile-high-profit-summit. Check out what we have going on and sign up, because this thing is going to sell out quickly. I don't know. I totally hijacked your questions and stuff, man. I'm sorry.
No, no, you're good. That's great stuff, man. It's great stuff. I mean, I imagine like people listening, there's probably a good chance people are listening who are the $2,400 people still right now. And they're just, you know, maybe they're in that defensive mode where they've been defending and defending, but really deep down, they know that they want to make that 5,000, you know, and it's scary to do things that are new and try things that you haven't tried yet. And, you know, but like, it's like, yeah, it gets to that point where it's like, you're either going to sink or swim and do it, you know, because, and I think that that's why a lot of businesses, they say businesses fail in with the first 5 years or whatever, is because, you know, you do good in business, you get a good reputation, you're working, and then you start to get a good, you know, and then you start to get more calls and you're doing more business. And then you're like, why am I not making any money? And it's like, because in order to sustain an operating business that's constantly operating, it requires being able to make the money to cover that overhead, cover that salary, so you can pay yourself to run the company and hire other people to do stuff to pay them. And it really costs a lot of money, you know? So, you know, it's like, you know, take that leap and start, you know, like, you know, yeah, I mean, I started charging more before I started doing the job costing. So it was more difficult for me to sell it because I didn't like believe in it or really see it. But once I started seeing it, like once I really started seeing it, like looking at it and being like $240, like that just will not do. like it won't. So it's, yeah.
You could drive an Uber for a long party night in Detroit and make more than $240, man, when it comes to tips and everything, you know? So it's like, but that's how my brain works. And I want to encourage people with this too. Like the $2,400, I was priced at a 50% gross profit, by the way.
Oh,
I mean, that was at a 50. Okay. Had everything gone right, it would have been a 50 and this and that, but I was just getting, so the gross profit thing for me many years ago was like step one, right? Mm-hmm. And step two was like, okay, now let's focus on net profit and true overhead and all those other things. And guys, the higher gross profit it is, the easier it is to pay your overhead. So that's why I always start there. And I always say, start at the 50, right? But what I made the shift, man, was I stopped pricing based on what the spreadsheet said or whatever. And I started pricing based on their motive and their problem and the value we were bringing. So back to this big ceiling thing that I'm talking about, there are so many things that could go wrong. Mm. I mean, you know this, like you're not painting the walls in that other room. By the way, they didn't have any of the leftover paint. So it's not like you can go back around and touch shit up. So we had to like drape massive amounts of plastic all the way down to the floor. We had, you know, to move everything in that area. There's big, huge entertainment system and that had to be worked around, and it was hard for ladders. It was one of those ceilings where, of course, they had some fixture in the middle of the ceiling and there's no way you can get it with a ladder. So you had to rent scaffolding, like you just name it. And it was a pain in the ass. And so I just started looking like all the different things that need to go right here. And what is that really worth? Let somebody else do that for $240 or $200 or whatever the hell. Shit, most guys aren't even bidding their work at a 50%, man. You know, so they're not even going to make the 10% net necessarily. So, so price, you know, we do this with our coaching too, man. Like, you know, I'll just use an example with my coach. I hire my coach. He ain't cheap. It's a lot of money. And I don't care how long our calls are. I don't care, because I come to our calls and I have an objective. And if we nail that in 7 minutes and we're done, we're done. I'm fine. Because I care about the problem being solved. And guys, consumers are like that. I promise you, especially people that are well off and have money and are your ideal clients. If they're going to be nitpicking you in every little minute on the job and shit, they're not your ideal client. Right. Or you didn't do a good job of selling your value or whatever it is and identifying and meeting the need of the problem. Another project you probably heard me talk about is the lady that I said, what's the worst thing that happened on this job with whenever you hire somebody? And she's like, you wake up my twins. If you wake up my twins, I will kill every one of you. Like, it has to be quiet between this time and this time. Long story. And so I charged way more to guarantee we wouldn't wake the twins up.
Yeah.
And I put some steps in place where we went off site for a long lunch. We shifted our start time so that the time of lunch, and I said, let's do some training during lunch. We made it an hour and a half lunch, half an hour for lunch, an hour of training. I said, you text me when the kids are awake and we'll come back on site. That's worth something to her, right? So the typical price wasn't going to meet that need. Anyway, so what are some other limiting beliefs that you've overcome in the last couple of years being in the community, man?
Yeah, man, that's a good question. I think that the biggest one that I'm struggling with is, I think that I have like an overall limiting belief that, you know, like I don't really measure up, you know, and I think that's one that comes from childhood and, you know, kind of seeing, you know, feeling the way that I felt around my parents while they went through a divorce, but like, it's really carried and grown. And so like, once I started taking a look at all this, you know, like in the contractor fight in Battleground and in the CSA, and I'm listening to other people talk about how, you know, they're growing their $1 million company to $5 million to $10 million. Like, it's really, really hard for me to like believe that, you know what I mean? Like believe that, like Paintly, it's a brand I could see it, but like, do I believe it? You know?
Yeah.
And one of my takeaways from Nash Vegas was like the T-bar thing, like our thought, like our thoughts, you know, are followed up by our beliefs, and you know, they're all coordinated, and like, we're not going to act in congruence. Like, we're not going to act
in conflict
against in conflict of what we believe. Yeah.
Yep.
And so like, you know, for me, really believing that like, yeah, no, I can do this. I can scale up my company. I can hire a rock star team of like 1, 2, 3, 4 other C's, you know, who are rock stars to really help me so I can double down on my strengths and hire out my weaknesses. I feel this feeling that like I need to do everything. And that's also coupled with this fear that I'm not capable of doing it. So I think I get stuck. It's head trash. And, you know, cause like I've been thinking like, maybe I need to hire like an office admin who can help with like those job costing things and maybe some recruiting and some social media and all the stuff that I'm not super like excited about or awesome at. But I'm like, well, what if I choose some of the wrong person? What if they don't work out? All these what if BS, you know, instead of like, what if this is the best thing that's ever happened to me? What if this is the best thing for the company? Like, I'm stuck.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Well, I think for you and anyone feeling like the believe, like having a hard time believing this could happen for me or whatever, especially with social media, everyone's highlight reel is played. You know what I'm saying? And I will tell you right now, 100% of the companies that I've ever worked with in the last decade or so, 12 years, whatever it's been, and I've been behind the scenes of a bunch of them, man. And I'm talking from, you know, companies that are $500,000 all the way up to $100 million that I've worked with. 100% of them are fucked up once you get under the hood. Okay. So let me just say that to everybody. Like, you look from the outside and the grass is always greener. I can tell you it ain't greener in a lot of these other companies you see. Second thing, the number of people that start a business, scale it, and make a shit ton of money in the first few years is probably about as common as a UFO landing in your kitchen. Okay. Like, it's extremely rare. And yet when we see things on social, or people come on podcasts, and what do? We're like, this guy built his company to $30 million in 7 weeks, you know, and shit like that. And then it makes us compare ourselves and it just fucks with our mental state and depresses us. At least that's what it does to me. And so I would just encourage you or anybody else with this, like, it takes decades to build multi-million dollar brands in many cases, you know, depends on the industry. It depends. I mean, dude, think of this. You're a painter and I believe this. I'll take this to the grave and I will put the gloves on and argue that, I'll just get in the ring and swing. All right. This is how much I believe this. I believe if you build a $1 million painting company, it's the equivalent of building a $7 to $10 million landscaping company or remodeling business, because job sizes are so different. Dude, you know, like, let me just got my calculator. All right. Mm-hmm. Now, guys, painting is like, if it's you have a $1 million company, maybe 150 grand's material. Mm-hmm. Okay. So 82 to 85% of your revenue is labor. Mm-hmm. I just want you guys to think about that for a second. So, and dude, I have coached so many people through the years. I usually see painting companies, like, per field employee, it's between $125,000 and $175,000 of revenue per field employee. You get into the pond guys that you know that are in our group and some of the outdoor living guys and this and that, it's like 400 grand a guy in the field. Because, you know, for every 10 grand they sell in revenue, you know, 4 grand is going to the materials and the brick and the pavers and all these other things. And so, and they got, obviously they have higher equipment costs and things that we don't have. So I get that, but I just want to give perspective here. Like, you go and build a $1 million painting company or a handyman company or, you know, something like that, where the ticket prices aren't like $100,000 backyards. I don't know about you, man, but I think I might have done $100,000 project in my whole career as a painting contractor. We did millions in sales, and our average job, depending on the time, winter time was $3,500. Summertime, it was like $8,500. Mm-hmm. Okay? Now we chose to work in neighborhoods that didn't have a lot of prep work on the exteriors of like old wood and shit. I just wanted cookie cutter houses. You come in, you do a little caulking, you wash the house, and boom, you're done. Okay. Mm-hmm. One of the things we did, Steve, was we included like basic material in our hourly rate because it just worked. We job costed so much that it worked out. So if I looked and I went, okay, that's a 48 hour job times call it $85, it'd be 4,080. And I knew I could sell it at that and hit our 50% if we hit it on track, because I knew that, you know, no more than $650 was going to be material out of that. So all you other guys that are non-painters right now, I want you to think about that. If you're an outdoor living guy, if you're building water features, you're building kitchens, you do a $4,000 job, how much of that is material? A lot in most cases. So if I'm just at 85 an hour, you go $1 million divided by 85, that's just under 12,000 man hours that need to be produced to collect that revenue. So that's why I'm doing this right now, buddy. Like, we're painters right now, and I'm like fighting for some respect for painters. People are like, oh, it was only a $1 million company. And it's like, fuck you. It's like 10 million for all you other shitheads. All right. Mm-hmm. You know, plus we have, when's the last time, like, I know it happens now and then, but like, there's some trades where you don't have the homeowner going, well, I'd paint it myself. I just don't have time. I mean, how many times do fucking people say that to a painter, right? Well, if you paint it yourself, then do it yourself, you dick. But, I want to give props to the painting contractors, the handymen, those that have to grow a multi-million dollar business. You really got to take the context of the trade, you know, like, there's commercial guys that are doing $15, $20 million a year. Okay. Mm-hmm. But they're building a car dealership. Like, and their average job is $3 million, you know, and so there's just all these other factors. So I guess those that are listening and you, Steve, like, don't put this pressure on yourself that you got to be all that, like, you got to define your own success.
Yeah.
So what does a win look like to Steve? What does it look like to whoever else? Like, hey, here, let me just say this, and I promise I'm going to shut up, man. I'm pumped up right now.
Good.
Do not be one of those people that say, if I could only make fill in the blank, you are limiting your income. man, I used to do this, man. I remember, dude, if I could only make $3,500 a month, I literally used to say that. And then it was $5,000. And then it was $100,000 a year. Right. And shit like that. And what I, looking back, I'm like, when you say, if I could just make $4,000 a month, everything would be cool. I could have some breathing room. I just put a limiting belief on my income.
Yeah.
I just put a lid on it. Okay. Yeah. So anyway.
Yeah. Cause now what you do have isn't enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This is one of the weirdest podcasts I've ever done because I turned it into like a lecture and
that's okay.
So
yeah. Well, a lot of good stuff.
I get fired up when I talk to a painter like you, man, because I get it. Like, it's just this, the amount of things, I'm going to toot painter's horns here a minute too. The amount of things that have to go right for you to be a good painter. Like, if you think about it, you have to be, you got to be able to cut well, you have to have knowledge of different adhesives and caulks and tapes. You have to be able to lift a 32-foot ladder and carry that around, but you also have to be nimble enough to squat down for several hours and fuck around with baseboards all day. I mean, if you just think of the skill sets a painting contractor, a painter needs, okay, versus some other trades, and I'm not taking anything away from other trades. I'm just saying a lot of people go, oh, it's just painting, you know? And it's like, no, it's not just painting. And then the average painter that's in the home, we're probably residentially, I think we're probably the most intimate trade.
Yeah.
With the client. Cause we have, you know, like a guy comes in and replaces an outlet who's an electrician. He's in the house, but he ain't there waiting for something to fucking dry.
Right. You right.
Do another like coat or a patch to dry or whatever it is. You know what I'm saying? So like there has to be social skills and good soft skills and communication and this and that. You can't just show up looking like a shithead cause you're going to dig a hole in the backyard. Nobody cares.
Right.
Which they do care, by the way, but I don't know. Does any of that make sense? Anything you want to comment on?
Yeah, no,
totally running my fucking mouth here, man. So
no, you're totally right. I was thinking like, you're right. It is an intimate thing because it takes time to paint people's houses, you know, and especially if we're painting like full on rooms or the whole house, it's like, hey, if you guys aren't like going on vacation for the next week, like we're going to be all up in your space. And we're going to be taking over your kitchen. We're going to be taking over your living room. We're going to be shoving your bed, a whole bunch of stuff on top of your bed and moving your dressers and throwing plastic over it so we can paint it all hopefully quick enough to where you can have a place to sleep again so you don't have to sleep in your kid's room or the spare room. And we're all up in their space. And, you know, we were just doing a job where, you know, the whole family, the dog, the kids, the cat, we're all like, downstairs on the lower floor, cuddled up like on this couch. He's the husband's doing work. They both work from home and we're just like taking over their whole house. But it was a good experience because like we're a pretty rock star team and we're, you know, very personable and they're hanging out with us, talking to us, and you know, we're providing a good experience for them, but like we're spending a lot of time with them, like around us and us around them. And I think that that's a really important part of, you know, a lot of people don't think about that is like a lot of times I think that the focus is on making sure you get the job and then making sure you get paid when the job's done. But like, there's also the whole part of like, what about during the job? What's it like for those people while we're there? What's the experience like for them? Because that's what's going to get them to like have you come back again and tell all their friends and family about you. And yeah. And I think that as painters, I think it's cool. You know, as painters, we have the opportunity to connect with people a little bit more like during the process of when it's happening. We're not like in their backyard or cutting down trees and, you know, making a bunch of noise on the exterior of their house. You know, we're like all up in their home.
You just gave, and I hope everyone here heard this, and if not, rewind like a minute. You just gave the key to scaling your business. Okay. And it's the experience. Everyone's like, oh, yes, you got to sell more. I get all that and market right, blah, blah, blah. But dude, people ask me all the time, how do I scale my business? And I literally go, you break it down to the job you're on right now and you kick fucking ass on that job right now. And then you repeat and then you repeat. And the next thing you know, you wake up 17 years later and you have a $19 million company. That's a national brand because you, when I say win, I don't mean you got the sale. Yeah, you got the sale, but win each job, right? Every job you do is like a game. It's game day. You got to win.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's how you scale your business, you guys. All right. Don't like triple your crews and drop your prices and think you're going to scale with volume and be profitable, because you're going to scale a shit show of chaos. Okay. So back to, you were talking about moving furniture and stuff. Public service announcement for those of you that ever are going to hire house painters. Before the painters come, look under the bed and put your sex toys away. Okay. I can't tell you how many dildos we've found under beds. Okay. And how uncomfortable it is for your crew leader or me or whoever. Cause sometimes my crew leader is like, I am not fucking telling her this time. You need to call her. I remember picking up the phone. I'm like, hey, Jenny, what's up? She's like, hey, Tom. I'm like, hey, listen, you're still working from home, right? Yeah, I'm down in the office in the basement, blah, blah, blah. Well, listen, we got kind of a weird thing, and I imagine this is probably not very, you know, comfortable for you, but they move the bed to paint the wall, and she goes, oh my God. She just said it. She knew. And she goes, okay. I said, I'll have them go outside, so give it like 5 minutes, and then go up, and then figure out whatever you got to figure out. She's like, okay. So we're obviously trying to protect her honor in that, right? But I'm sure you have stories too. Like the stories a painter sees, like it's crazy. The shit a painter sees. But also, I want to say this. This is why you need to charge more. This is why you need to make more. Not because of the dildos, okay? But because the queen and I, we have 5 kids between us. And 3 of them are girls. And one's home from college now, and the other 2 still live here. So I got 3 girls under one roof, right? Plus my queen. I don't want some shithead coming in the house. Mm. You know? Yeah. Like, and that's where we would always make a big deal out of like the types of people we would hire, and we would do profiles on our people on social media, and we'd be like, hey, you know, meet Steve, and Steve lives in such and such town, and he's been married 16 years, and he's got 3 daughters and a son, and his son's in the Marine Corps, and he's blah, 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 and he's been painting and this and that, and you know, this is what he does on the weekends. And like, we're trying to make you a human being and make the case for like, we're the type of people that you want moving your daughter's dresser. Just think about that for a minute, you guys. Okay. And so this is why you have to have enough gross profit and net profit and clear vision and culture and values of the company and stuff, so that you can reinvest into people, hire the right people, not just settle for the scraps that are out there on the street, which is what most people think of when they think of stereotypical painters or contractors, right? They think of a guy who's got a drinking problem and he's all tatted up. He has butt crack and he's late and smells like an ashtray. That's what most people think of, you know, and I would say nowadays, get rid of all the stuff but the tattoos. All right. And there's more good people out there in the trades, but we don't do a good enough job of highlighting the people that we employ. And you're right. If you're coming to pressure wash my house and you're on the outside and you never set foot inside, I don't care when you come, just come. Don't fuck up my flowers or whatever. Right. Like do a good job. But if you're going to set foot in somebody's house and you're going to be there with them intimately, you have to pay attention to that experience. And I just wanted to draw attention to what you said, man, because you're like, it's the experience. That's what scales your business.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
What's one of the craziest things you've seen on a job site?
I wish I had a dildo story. That hasn't happened yet. That hasn't happened yet. Gosh, you know, there really haven't. I don't really know. I can't really think of anything too crazy that's happened on a job site. I've been pretty fortunate. There was a really weird scenario once that involved the friendliness level of the wife with me, and I had to handle that very professionally, which was really strange because it's almost one of those things you think would never happen. But then something does, and you're like, is she texting me? But yeah. No, it was a situation where I was like, you know, think of all the things that could totally go wrong here, you know, but other than that, I'd say like things that I've seen have been pretty much like, you know, maybe I've just been lucky, maybe Metro Detroit area, I've been in the right neighborhoods or like, the right people, but
yeah. Yeah. They have the wherewithal to look under the bed before the painters come.
Anyway, yeah. It's good. Yeah.
I think after that, we put something in our paperwork of how to get ready for us to paint your house. And it was like something like, make sure you look under the bed and pull things away from the walls and this and that. And, you know, vacuum up any dust and clean any loose items or whatever it was off the floor and this and that, you know, so that, you know, we can spend our time painting and not cleaning or something like you know, but it was, right, it's all good fun. So you didn't open the door and she was like in a robe and go, oh, I didn't know you were coming. Like it was one of those things. Like, all right, we can go in the gutter in a hurry, which we're not going to do. So,
yeah. Well, it's interesting things like that happen, and you know, how do you handle it? Because things can go very, very wrong. It's your company, it's your reputation, and mm-hmm. you know, there's like also like levels of morality. I mean, you're dealing mm-hmm. with the public, you're dealing with all sorts of people. You never know what you're going to get.
Well, dude, it's even like back to the daughter thing and stuff, like. I'm not going to say we knocked this out of the park with some company policy, but if I were doing it over again, we were aware of it, but I don't recall us ever putting a policy. But right now, I would probably put a policy that, like, if there's a minor home, we're not coming in the house. If it's just right. a minor, like, it ain't happening. Sorry. We're going to reschedule, wow, yeah. like, you know, because I, you know, or at the very least, there's two of us working together. It's not a one-man team. To go mm-hmm, in and do right. touch-ups or something. Because that happens, I know, with like small jobs, go paint a bathroom or whatever for the day. And of course, nothing's going to happen, you know, but man, you never know.
Right.
You know, you just never know. I mean, it's just fucking the world we live in. And I knew a guy who knew a guy, so I didn't directly know the guy, but he needed day labor to help him with some, he wasn't a painter, he was some other trade. This is a long time ago. God, man, forgot about this. And he drove to, you know, Dunkin' Donuts or whatever in the morning, and all the dudes are sitting out front looking for cash work and stuff. And he picked up a couple guys. One of the guys he picked up murdered the family that day.
Oh my
like,
God.
Fucking crazy. Like it was like an exterior contractor of some kind, and they just needed him to like labor and move shit. And he just snapped and like fucking took a hammer to everybody or some shit. It was what? Fucking crazy. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
yeah.
Wild.
So anyway, everybody, I recommend you background check who you're putting in people's homes, you know, and you have some training. Don't, you know, I mean, guys, like, don't be so desperate to fill a spot on the roster that you bring mm-hmm. somebody in who's not a good fit, not a good human being, doesn't have some good character. Due to the reason you're getting so much repeat business and kicking ass and selling at higher rates and all the things that you're succeeding with is because you pay attention to this little stuff.
Right. Yeah. It all comes. Yeah. It all is part of it, part of the experience, you know, like, and that's the reality. You know, we are inside people's homes, mm-hmm. you know, we are inside people's homes. And I remember Lindsay at Nash, remembering Nash Vegas, how she talked mm-hmm. about like, you know, selling to women and, yeah. you know, like I had never thought about it before of like what it would feel like, you know, to show up if it's just the woman, if it's just a woman that's home or the wife and, you know, to ask, may I come in? Just simple manners, because that's their home. They're the keeper of the kids, the keeper of the house, mm-hmm. the keeper of the spouse, you know, just being cognizant of that. Like these are people's homes that we are inside of. And that's a very personal thing. And nailing it, really nailing it. I can see what you're saying, where really nailing it is a huge factor to success. Yeah.
I did a thing at Mile High last year where I brought Bob Gear up on stage, and Bob's like 7'5" or something like that. He's somebody, I don't even know how tall he is, 6'8", 6'9", 6'7", something like that. And I think, and I forget who else I brought up. I don't know if it was Lindsay or I don't know. I brought somebody up. I think it was a woman, pretty sure. And I said, okay, knock on, like turn around, like put your backs to each other and then knock, 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 turn around and look at each other. Like that's kind of what it is when a 5'2" woman opens the door and there's this big guy who's not Bob's all tatted up, but he's 6 whatever. yeah. No, but guys, think about that. Like, you know, Steve, I'm glad you brought that up about Lindsay's session that she did last year about selling to women, and just everything you do matters. Where you park, when you knock on the door, step back and down on a step or two, so you're shorter than the woman or at least the same height. So you're not towering with all, you know, your big fucking beard and tats and, you know, AR-15 on your fucking shirt going, hey, can I come in? You know, like that's that initial, yeah, it's that initial impression. And so, and again, 99.9% of all of us are teddy bears, right? And wouldn't harm anybody in a million years. And if anything, we'd protect these people, right? But if they don't know you, you know, and that's why I like sending, you know, quick video like, hey, I'm Billy. I'm the crew leader. I'm going to be running your job. I can't wait to come meet you and blah, blah, blah. Like anything that you all can do to kind of soften the beaches, right? Before you show up with the crew helps that experience and gives peace of mind.
So, yeah.
Well, dude, in the last couple minutes here, we've been all over the place today. This is funny. I'm curious. You got 30 seconds to a minute. What's one thing you want to share with the audience that maybe we haven't talked about to help contractors all over the world right now?
Man, I mean, I guess one thing that I had in my head that I wanted to say is just like how passionate I am about like what we do in the fight. I mean, I've like, as a painter, like I've branched out, you know, there's all sorts of different groups. There's groups for painters, tile people, I'm sure, whatever your trade is. And I've delved in like the other groups and in the painter groups and stuff like that. And they have software and advice and things of how to grow your business. But like, I always come back to this. Like, I always come back to the fight, to you guys, the drivers of this group, and the things that you teach and the support. I think like the support of the people in this group, like it's truly something to be a part of if you're a contractor. Like I can't imagine being a contractor without this, like being a part of this group. I just wanted to share that.
I appreciate that. That means a lot, man. That's huge. And that means a lot. And it's much appreciated. Thank you. I'm proud of our team. They're in it for the right reasons. We just want y'all to win. And I think one of the things that makes the team so good is they're always trying to get better. They're always trying to learn something new. They're always looking at weaknesses in their game. Mm-hmm. All of us are. Back to the top of this, when we talked about you don't have to know everything, right? They're like, have some humility. And to me, you guys, humility is about being confident that, hey, I'm going to be okay. I'm going to figure this shit out. I don't have to be impressive with all the answers all the time. So,
right.
Well, dude, if somebody wants to, there's a GC listening to this or somebody, designer, whatever, that wants to get in touch with you or somebody wants to come work with for you or whatever, how do they find you? Where do you want them to go?
For me, www.paintly.co. It's our website. You know, I mean, I don't know. Is it okay to share our number on this?
You do whatever you want, man. I mean, if you want to get a bunch of, you know, prank calls at 1 a.m, go for it.
Hey, if it's from people that are listening to this, then hey, you're my people. You're my people. If you've made it this far into this podcast, please. Yeah. 248-782-2882. You know, reach out, call, text. You know, I'd be happy to chat, talk business, do business, you know, whatever.
Good stuff, yeah, man. We'll put the link to the website in the show notes and stuff like that. And dude, I appreciate you hanging with me here today. And I know we were all over and I was a little crazy there for a bit, but I get fired up when I talk to painters like you. So it's
good. Yeah. No, we love it
so much. So
we love, love it when you get fired up, Tom. It fires us up. So yeah.
There you go, buddy. Well, dude, have an awesome day. Keep kicking ass. And everybody subscribe to the podcast. Give us a rating, review the show, share it with another contractor. And with that, we'll see you guys next time on The Fight.
Awesome.